Blog Talk Radio.
Graham Hancock. You're listening to Earth Ancients with Cliff Dunning.
Hey, and we are done with the holidays, aren't we? You know, I'm kind of like still trying to figure out what happened to Christmas. And New Year's was like a blink of the eye. I don't know what happened with that either. Has nothing to do with any alcohol consumption or anything like that. It's just that it seems like what happened, you know, what happened. I guess I wasn't really into it this year. I don't know what that's all about. I'm a little, I'm like scratching my head because I don't know what happened to the holidays this year. I guess I've been working just too much, just doing too many things. Hey, a good day to you. I hope you're doing well. And welcome to Earth Ancients, another great show today. I always suggest people check out Facebook, and I don't know, a lot of you may not be on Facebook or you find it that's frivolous and a pain to deal with, but the Earth Ancient page that we have on there is a really, really good source for a lot of the content we cover on the program. And not only is are the articles posted by a lot of authors themselves, a lot of times it's a great way to connect with the author via a post, and people ask questions and post their own information as rebuttals, as critiques, or just conversations with the people that are on the program. And it's really easy to get to. If you don't have a Facebook account, I really strongly suggest you do it. Hey, don't, if you're not into the posting your own stuff, if you're kind of private, if you're not really into that, just put a real basic account together. But, you know, peruse through not only Earth Ancients, but under the subject line, put in, you know, ancient civilizations, lost civilizations, whatever your interest is, aliens, UFOs, Atlantis, Lemuria. I mean, really, it's a real great resource for content. I'm constantly updating my page. I'm constantly getting information. I have two sites. The one that I really blog on the most and put most of the information on is the Earth Ancients Facebook page under groups. I also have an international page that has about 100,000 people that are continually contributing. And I heard a couple of weeks ago that my readership is up to 1 million people. I don't know. I can't verify that. But appears to be, the site appears to be very heavily used. And so I post a lot of information on that site too. But the reason I'm suggesting this Facebook page, Earth Ancients Facebook, is that it's easy for me to post material on that site. And look, until I get a really solid website up, that's where you're going to have to go to get material. And this week, there's two articles I want to put up, tell you about that were put up just a few days ago. And probably the best, one of the most interesting articles was written by a stonemason expert named James Byram. And he actually went to Egypt and did some studies on some of these megalithic stone sarcophaguses and the techniques that appear to be quite evident to him. And to my mind, he took a page out of Chris Dunn's book, who's an engineer who many years ago wrote an amazing book on the techniques of cutting heavy stone and the insanity that Egyptologists expect us to adhere to, which is that the Egyptians used copper tools and hardened rocks to cut these amazingly detailed and beautifully finished stone sarcophaguses and boxes and just huge multi-ton hard granite sculptures. And this article is called Lost Technology of Ancient Egypt. And in this article, he goes into the evidence for machinery. And what that means is that he is using measuring tools to measure the surface texture, to measure the finish, to measure the cutting and boring into granite that was on display in a number of museums in Egypt. And it's quite evident to most of us that when you see these photographs and what he shows, that these boxes, these granite sculptures, had to have been cut by some form of really powerful machinery to bore, to cut. And when you cut into granite, it leaves a trace, it leaves a track. Chris Dunn was very brilliant in his analysis of the tools, actually even suggested a couple of tools that would have been used, machining tools, routers, cutting devices, and other tools that would have been used to cut. And James feels the same way in this article, Lost Technology in the Egyptian Museum. So check that out. It's a really fascinating piece. And it really shows us that there's a huge part of our history that's missing. There's a lot of history that's missing that's been conveniently covered over because there's no explanation for it. Because we don't have the machines to show the evidence, because there are no photos of these machines. Well, actually, we don't know if there are photos. We may not be able to interpret them as machines, but there's no written documents of artisans using machines that we know of. Because of those bits of missing evidence, it's left to, you know, Stone Age tools, you know, copper tools and rocks to cut this stuff, which is kind of goofy. But the evidence is in the finished work, and you just have to view some of these finished products to realize that this is the work of a very advanced civilization. The other article I want to talk about is a discovery that was made a few years ago that I didn't know about. It's in El Pital, Veracruz, Mexico. And this discovery is substantial, and it's starting to really come out now. Dr. Jeffrey Wilkerson has been researching this area, which appears to be extremely old. Veracruz, Mexico is known for a number of sites, ancient Maya sites. But this area is a huge pyramid complex that is completely covered under dirt. And they're just beginning to do the first series of excavations that you can see in this photo exposition that I've posted. And the aerial shots of these pyramids is amazing. I don't know if you've been studying pyramids, if you're into pyramids, you probably are familiar with the white dome pyramids of China. And those are all earthen pyramids. These pyramids in Mexico are stone pyramids. You can see some of the evidence in the some of the early excavations of some of the side walls of some of these pyramids. But if you look at the photographs, this is a huge complex, many, many miles square. It doesn't actually give a description, but from the photographs, I'd say, you know, 20 miles by 30 miles square. And there's it's just littered with these amazing pyramids. In fact, according to some of the early articles, the locals have known about it for centuries. And it's unfortunate that that they can't get in there and start really excavating maybe one of the main pyramids just to see what's underneath it, because it's from the looks of it, it looks like a monster, at least 100 feet in the air, covered with vegetation. But check it out. On the Facebook page, and it's a real sight to behold. The main photograph reveals probably four pyramids right in the foreground, and the main pyramid in the background, all covered in vegetation, except for the top where you can see they kind of the farmers kind of removed the heavy vegetation and did some crop planting, which is kind of interesting. So El Pital, Veracruz, Mexico. This is something that's going to be in the news, I have a feeling, pretty soon, because it's pretty cool. It's pretty amazing. I have mentioned recently that we are looking to start some crowdfunding. The network that I'm on right now has asked me to consider creating my own network. And for those of you who have been regular listeners for a number of years, we've had probably the foremost authorities on most of the fields that I discuss here on the program. Most, if not all, of the top writers, bestsellers. And a lot of these people that we have on the program are they have so much material that it would probably be great for them, rather than going and spending years on writing a book, to have their own little show, to host their own program. Can you imagine someone like Graham Hancock hosting a 40-minute, one-hour talk on his latest research? Randall Carlson discussing some of his latest finds, think of, you know, three or four or five people you'd like to hear on a weekly basis. So this is something that is in the works, but the time involved, the development of something of that nature is very time consuming. So we are in the first phases of developing a crowdfunding program. And hey, my our artist Curtis is come up with some fantastic logo designs for Earth Ancients that are going to be available on T-shirts, on a really dynamite sweatshirt, caps. So if you give us a few bucks, you can get a really cool garment. We'll also have some books to give away, autographed books. If you don't have a copy of Magicians of the Gods, I have a handful of those. So we're going to need to fund this thing to get it going. And I think a network of this kind is going to be very, very cool. Can you imagine 4 days a week of Earth Ancient topics? The truth of the matter is it's really hard to keep on top of all these discoveries. And, I spend each day kind of perusing the internet looking for the latest info. And a lot of the major news sources, CNN and say UK Daily and other online publications, they talk a little bit about some discoveries, but they're not really into stuff that's going to cause a great deal of controversy. So that's where the individual researchers sending me stuff is really a plus. And as we've heard, people like Holly Omberg, who discovered this lost civilization in Bolivia, that's finally getting out on CNN. But extensive research in this area hasn't happened yet, and these are things that we're going to hear about in the main news outlets. So I kind of pride myself on the ability to provide you with kind of groundbreaking information and releasing it to you on Earth Ancients Radio. So this crowdfunding program, I think, is extremely important. I hope you'll join me in supporting it. Hey, and I'll get you guys everything you need to hear about the latest material. Graham Hancock has shown interest. He's totally – I just connected with him yesterday. He's been on a four-month tour and talk schedule, lecture schedule, and he's – frankly, he says he's burnt out. He needs to take some time off. I can't imagine four-month tour talk, but that new book, Magicians of the Gods, is selling like hotcakes, and he's getting, you know, had a lot of demand for talk. So anyhow, that is something to consider, this network of Earth Ancient related materials with a bunch of different topics covered under the banner of Earth Ancient's Startling New Discoveries from Our Planet's Distant Past. Yeah, that's what it's all about. So, yeah, I hope you'll support that. You know, as you guys know, I talk a lot about the Maya. And the Maya are a real interesting culture. We don't know a lot about them, but I've said it a thousand times. I've said it a lot. That we don't know. Science doesn't know where they inherited their technology, where they inherited their engineering and mathematical skills, and how they came up with these amazing calendars that today are still a great deal of fascination. But there's evidence. There's evidence of some other culture influencing them to a great degree. And the big influencer in the Mayan culture is mythological character. His name was Kukla Khan, who was a white bearded god. From all descriptions, he was a Caucasian. He came from the ocean, Atlantic, and then he left from the Atlantic and he said he would be back. But the Mayans are just one interesting civilization that has been influenced by another very advanced culture. And over the last few weeks, we've talked with a number of authors and researchers who have discussed this terminating event, the Younger Dryas period, where the Earth was bombarded by an asteroid or heavy bodies of a planetoid broken up that bombarded the Earth and caused eventually a flood, may have irradiated the Earth. We know in North America there are areas where there's mineral deposits that are like meteorites that just were this pelted Northern United States, but you know what was on the planet before that happened? My belief is that there was an ancient culture. My belief was there was a is that there was an Atlantis. There was a very sophisticated culture that was a huge influence on the descendants, those who survived. And we hear about it from the evidence of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, a very sophisticated, what appears to be university. We have it in Egypt with these extremely sophisticated pyramids and other structures now dated deep, deep into antiquity. And at the time of the pre-dynastic kings of Egypt, they saw and in some cases rebuilt or enhanced the structures that they inherited during their tenure. But my guest today has a different look, has evidence, he believes, of Atlantis. And he has spent a good deal of time not only researching the Mediterranean, Europe, but he's going to tell us about evidence research and mining and contact with the Americas, and specifically United States. This book that he has is called Uchronia, Atlantis Revealed. And my guest today is Chris to join us. Chris, how are you?
Good, Cliff. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining me. You know,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, this book's fascinating because it touches on a lot of material that is very timely for me and our guests, our listeners who have been kind of following along a trail of evidence from catastrophe to a massive flood to evidence of a sophisticated civilization, not only in the Americas, but around the world prior to these events. What was it that really fascinated you about this story that Plato described on Atlantis? What was the kind of the premise that triggered you to start writing this book?
Well, I, in all honesty, I heard about the story. I learned about the story like most of us from school. You know, I'm Greek by birth, and we heard about Greek mythology and this story particularly over the years, and I was always fascinated by it. When I started to write this book, in all honesty, I wanted to write a book about several mysteries that we're surrounded with. And I obviously one is Atlantis, and in all honesty, I did not know what to write at the time. It took me about 40 years to write my book. And during this period, I think I revisited the Atlantis chapter over a period of time. And in all honesty, like I said, I did not exactly know how to proceed to look into this mystery. So it was one of the last chapters I completed, although from time to time I collected evidence and research, and I went back and I tried to put my chapter together. You know, the chapter was not completed almost at the end of the book. You know, once I discovered the island and it matched perfectly to Plato's description, at that point I realized I had something concrete. And from there forward, you know, it was a piece of cake, basically, to put the story together.
Right. We're going to get into the location of your Atlantis and what you feel is the details, the information related to Plato's story of it. But before we do that, I want to discuss this the premise of the book, and especially the first part of the book where you provide evidence of highly sophisticated, not only machinery, but ruins and construction and archaeology and things like that. Let's start with some of the material that you found. You actually refer to the Santorini area as almost following word for word what Plato said. We'll start off with that area. That's the Cyclades Islands. Is that correct?
Cyclades, yes.
Cyclades, yes.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I heard about the original theory of Santorini, you know, many, many, many years ago. You know, archaeologists concluded that if the story of Atlantis is true, Santorini is a good candidate for that. The problem with the original theory, though, was that at first it was based on the wrong chronology around 1600 BC instead of the 9600 BC Plato was talking about. And second, and most importantly, during the proposed period of 1600 BC, the primary island of Atlantis, one Plato said it was supposed to be 9 kilometers away, is missing from the particular setting of Santorini. So in my opinion, I thought it was a big mistake to ignore Plato's given chronology of 9600 BC. So unlike others who focused and based their entire work on details, I based my own research on Plato's given chronology as well as the physical description. I figured if I'm lucky enough to find a perfectly matched place, then I will deal with the details later. And as it seems, I got lucky. You know, when you search for Atlantis around the period of 9600 BC, and you take in consideration that, you know, the oceans were 400 feet lower at the time, it's not very hard to find the place I'm talking about. I did find in searching in the Mediterranean, by the way, that what led me to look in the Mediterranean to begin with, it was to read and reread and translate Plato's text, which many may disagree with me, but what I concluded, it was that Plato was talking about a place in the Mediterranean. So once I concluded that, I kept on looking for it. And like I said, you know, once you know where to look for it, it's not, you know, so hard to spot the place. So
right.
I found this place that is about 400 feet below sea level. And like I said earlier, it perfectly matches, Plato's description. So we have a primary island now. Before mm-hmm. on the original Santorini theory, we only had Santorini alone. And again, that was based on the 1600 BC period. In my theory and my side is based on a 9600 BC time frame, which is what Plato said.
Right.
And at that point of time, not only you have Santorini itself, which is an island within an island setting, but you also have the primary island of Atlantis that fell precisely 9 kilometers away from the island of Santorini. So it's as if you have basically when you take the primary island section by section and you say, okay, what makes this match Plato's description, and you dissect it and you see that each section of it precisely fits, then you go to the south of it, exactly 9 kilometers, and you find the island of Santorini, which Plato said it's a setting of an island within an island. So precisely what Plato said, it's in this site I propose.
Right. And the unique thing about this is that it's in the Mediterranean, and recent excavation, which you report on, shows that the homes had very sophisticated plumbing. They had hot and cold water, and they had a sewer system in each of the homes, which I found was very, very amazing. And you actually discussed that. Has there been any additional research since you wrote this?
Well, what I mentioned about that, that part of the book actually refers to the Minoan civilization, which came around a few thousand years later. Although my belief it is that the Minoans may be a post-Atlantean culture that arose on the area after the fall of Atlantis. Nevertheless, you know, the fact that Plato mentioned of springs of hot and cold water, that made Atlantis into a volcanic, island. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, I mentioned that Santorini itself always had springs of cold and hot water. In fact, in one instance, I mentioned that later on when the Minoans came along, which themselves were a very sophisticated culture, in their city of Akrotiri, which, by the way, I was there last year, and I looked at it with my own eyes, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. They this 3,500 year old city had sewers along with running cold and hot water supplying their entire city.
Right. Now, you believe that the Minoans are the actually descendants of the Latinians, right?
Well, I do, and I say this because, first of all, they arose on the exact same region, okay? Obviously, you know, if Atlantis was lost to the ocean, and by the way, not everything was, you know, was gone, you know, like many people believe when they read Plato's text, it talks about that Atlantis was sunk and vanished, but in a different, completely different paragraph, he clearly says that what was left was small islets, and he compared those to the bones of the country that once was there. Having said that, anyways, I think what happened basically, this once upon a time advanced civilization based on this super island in that area, once they lost their homeland, basically they scattered in the area, and within 1,000 or so years later, some obviously went into the Middle East. I think they went even as far as the Mesopotamia region, and those who stayed behind basically regrouped and eventually created the Minoan civilization. Now, the Minoans, according to historians, go back, you know, as far as 5,000, maybe 6,000 BC. They're finding irrigation canals. They're finding sophisticated technology that, you know, they tie to the Minoans as far back as 5,000 or 6,000 BC. Now, Plato's story, on the other hand, took place as far back as 8,000 or 9,000 BC. And what's you know, although we have a gap of a couple of thousand years, what fascinates me is that we're finding artifacts prior to the Minoans, statues and little artifacts that archaeologists do not know exactly to which civilization to attribute those to. Mm-hmm. And I think although they're leaning towards those could be Minoan, since they have no better answer, those are some funny-looking artifacts that I think were created, in my opinion, by those who were scattered by the Great Flood of the Mediterranean around 8,000 BC. Once those people, you know, lost their homes, over the centuries, they regrouped over the islands and started basically building artifacts again. And those are the artifacts we're finding today around the Cyclades Islands and near Santorini. And those definitely belong into a prior culture that very well could be associated with the Atlanteans.
Right. Let's come back to the islands, Cyclades Island, Plateau Islands, in a minute. But I want to talk about some of the evidence you give for high civilization. And one of the most fascinating discoveries that was made a few years ago is the Antikytheria mechanism that was discovered about, I think it's been about 20 years now. And this mechanism by itself has been studied and x-rayed to reveal not only gearing system that is mind-blowing for a 2,000-year-old astronomical tool, but the actual evidence of planetary alignments and known astronomy is equal to what we have today. In fact, Professor Michael Edmonds, who you describe in the book, had this to say. He says, "This device is just extraordinary. The only thing of its kind. The design is beautiful. The astronomy is exactly right. The way the mechanisms are designed just makes your jaw drop. Whoever has done this has done it extremely carefully. In terms of history, historic, and scarcity value, I have to regard this mechanism as being more valuable than the Mona Lisa." And I had to read that because I continually hear about this mechanism, this device, and it's one of these out-of-place artifacts that has academics just scratching their head. What can you tell us about it, and why do you think that it could have been from an Atlantean page out of their technology?
Well, I, you know, that mechanism, you know, is not. Let me back up a little bit. I mentioned of the mechanism to demonstrate that, along with the indicator mechanism and the backed battery and several other smaller technological wonders. It may not be the pyramids, but, you know, these things are so fascinating. Like you said, you know, people are scratching their heads, who's done it and why. I just wanted to demonstrate in my book that we should not underestimate the possibility that there was an ancient civilization more advanced than, you know, we've been told. Now, we all know that the Antikythera mechanism belongs in a different period, you know, probably it's dated around 2,500 years ago. But nevertheless, you know, we have no clue who did it. Same thing with what Plato claimed. You know, he claimed that 10,000 years ago we had a sophisticated civilization capable traveling to a continent across the ocean, and we treat that as a myth where, you know, DNA evidence, specifically haplogroup X, which is a Mediterranean gene, clearly points that, you know, a Mediterranean culture traveled all the way to North America. So, you know, definitely Plato was talking about something real, and that was not a myth.
Mm-hmm. But is it your belief that based on your writing, your deciphering of Plato's writings, that Atlantis probably was highly advanced and had an understanding of not only the Earth, but those of the planetary bodies around them, around the Earth?
Well, I think the Greeks did, the ancient Greeks did. In fact, I think the ancient Greeks knew that the Earth is a sphere and not a flat, you know, like many others thought at the time. And the Antikythera mechanism is the proof. Not only they knew that the Earth is a sphere, but obviously they knew their astronomy just perfectly. So, So what I'm trying to communicate is that not only they knew that all of that, but they also knew of the American continent across the Atlantic in order for Plato at the time to mention that in his story. You know, the part that he, you know, he talked about an island continent across the ocean that, you know, many, many people think he was talking about Atlantis. In fact, he was talking about the American continent and how people used to travel to it, as he said, you know, via island hopping, you know, which is basically from Scotland to Faroe Islands to Orkney Islands to Iceland and Greenland and finally to North America, which is just around the corner from there.
Yeah. Let's talk about the influence of very ancient cultures on the Americas and what you believe is a probable evidence of Minoan mining in northern Michigan. In your book, you outline, and by the way, we've had other authors discuss mining operations up in Michigan and other parts of eastern United States. And I'm just curious if you could tell us a little bit about what you discovered and what your evidence is of very ancient mining operations by Minoan people in the Americas.
Okay. Well, there's several clues that point to that. Obviously, evidence themselves, you know, point that the Minoans were around. But what originally started me into looking into the possibility that the Minoans and others did know about North America and possibly mining there was a story I heard about Hyperborea. You ever heard of the name of Hyperborea before?
I have, yeah. Why don't you tell our audience what Hyperborea is?
Okay. Well, Hyperborea is actually a Greek word that means extremely north. The ancient Greeks believed that Hyperborea was a land so far north, actually from Greece, that the sun there never sets. They also believed that this land was not easily accessible by foot or boat. You know, it's funny because we all know today that the only place that on Earth that the sun never sets, it's the Arctic Circle, you know, just over north of Greenland. You know, it starts from behind Greenland and, you know, it's basically the North Pole. So how would possibly the Greeks knew something like that to mention in a story that they know of a place so far north that the place, the sun never sets in that place. So that originally caught my attention. Then I heard and I learned from historians that nearly 2,000 years before the Greeks, the Minoans were capable of navigating outside the Mediterranean Sea and reached all the way to Orkney Islands, which is north of Scotland, to trade goods. Now, Orkney Islands are only two island stops away from Greenland. You know, the only, I think you have to go to after that is Faroe Islands and Iceland, and then you're in Greenland, basically. So if they were going there for a thousand years back and forth to trade goods, who's to say they didn't go a little bit further to reach Greenland, which is the edge of Hyperborea, and then once they reached that, they went a little bit further around the corner and reached to the American continent. I mean, it's logical, you know. So that's, you know, really, really attracted me to go further, you know. And there are more clues, you know, that the ancients knew of the American continent. For example, in 1996, Mark McMenamin, a geology professor from Mount Holyoke, I think, college, he discovered a Carthaginian coin that was minted around 350 BC. Now, on one side of this coin, you have a map of the world. You have the Mediterranean in the middle. You have an image on the east. Which that is interpreted to be Asia, and then clearly you have an image to the west that is interpreted to be that of America. And, you know, what I found interesting about this coin and about this discovery is the fact that it was minted within the same decade Plato wrote the story of Atlantis and mentioned about a continent across the Atlantic Ocean. And finally, you know, there is Piri Reis, you know, a famous cartographer, which around the time of 1513 time frame, he was using maps that show the entire American continent, including the Antarctica, some say. So while some dispute the part that those maps show Antarctica, what I have to point is that Piri Reis himself, he actually said repeatedly that his maps were based on ancient maps dated from the 4th century BC. In other words, during Plato's time. As far as the Minoans visiting North America, I have no doubt. In fact, we have evidence around the Great Lakes of copper mining. I think some of that copper, it's missing from the Great Lakes, which, by the way, we never found significant amounts of copper here in the United States to explain where the copper went. Anyways, a lot of the copper the Minoans used chemically matches precisely what the copper matches the copper product basically from the United States, number one. Number two, more importantly, in my book, is I mention also about that not only they were bringing back copper, but they also were bringing back spices. I don't know if you read before that several tests on mummies, you know, found that, you know, they used to do mummification back those days.
And yes, yes.
Exactly. You know what I'm talking about. You know,
yeah,
and they,
the mummies having evidence of tobacco,
yeah,
and
spices,
yeah,
in their bodies that only could have came from North America. Anyways, you know, I remember about listening to that show many, many, many years ago, and all of a sudden when I was writing the chapter of my book, I was thinking, wow, you know, now that explains it. You know, in fact, not only that explains where Egyptians got their spices from through the Minoans, but in Santorini, which is a Minoan territory basically, when they did the excavation after the volcanic eruption of 1600 BC, at a merchant's house, they found this bug, which is basically a tobacco, a beetle that feeds on tobacco, and that beetle, it was indigenous to America. I must remind you that tobacco was not introduced to Europeans until I think about 3,000 years later. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, my dates, if I'm not, you know, anyways, you know, we have the smoking gun there that, you know, how is this beetle, you know, came to Santorini 1600 BC.
Yeah.
If it came all the way from America, it's impossible. Somebody brought it back along with tobacco leaves, as they were using, like I said, heavily used by the Egyptians. So I think the Minoans were bringing all this stuff back and selling it in the region, including the Egyptians.
I think there's a huge missing part of our history,
not to mention the same bug I'm talking about. It was found inside the tomb of King Tut, as well as Ramses II.
This beetle that feeds on tobacco. Yeah,
that's right.
Amazing. You know, I want to go back a bit. This Carthaginian gold coin, I'm going to find that. I'm going to post that on our Facebook page. So if you can send me that coin, I'd like to post it. The reason I want to post it is...
Yeah, what's fascinating about that, Cliff, is that, you know, this guy went further and looked for more coins, you know, just in case that was some fluke. And he discovered every coin from that period, you know, shows the same map. It's not
really
a satellite map of any kind, you know, but clearly you can see the Mediterranean there very clearly, and you see an image to each side of it. Like I said, one represents Asia and the other represents America.
Which makes you wonder, maybe the coin was good throughout the Americas at some point. Maybe they had, trades, and they would use the coins for wherever that area was.
Yeah, I'm not going to go as far as saying that. I'm just going to say... that the Carthaginians, probably along with the Greeks and many others, knew of that continent. It was just like in the paper today, you read breaking news, you know, discover and it becomes, and you put it on a stamp, postage stamp, you know. I think it was a similar situation, that just to show greatness for their society, that they were aware of these continents all over the place, you know, I guess they minted it on their own coin, just for bragging rights.
Well, it really brings up a lot of issues when you see a coin like that. And one of the things that I've and most of us listening are aware of is that there's been a tremendous brain drain of information about our ancient history. The burning of the Alexandria Library, the destruction of the Mayan codices by Padre de Landa during the conquistadors, the burning of other libraries throughout northern Europe has done tremendous damage to our understanding of ancient culture. And when I see and I hear you talk about evidence in coins and the maps that show evidence of North America, it tells us that we are missing a huge part of our ancient history. And
absolutely,
what drives me nuts is when there is evidence shown in artifacts in building ruins and things like that, copper mines that could not have been dug by simple people. You know, I mean, there's even there's evidence of Romans in America too. You know, Roman coins and
yeah, I heard about that the other day. Sword or something, somebody found up in Canada.
Yeah, yeah, Nova Scotia, Roman. This has been on the news, and it continues to be in the news. A Roman sword, an honorary sword, was discovered along with, you know, hundreds of artifacts that are from Rome, and it continues to be studied, and it continues to blow everyone's mind.
Well, unfortunately, they continue to study it and continuously, you know, burying it under the carpet, I think, you know. It's what they cannot explain, you know, it is not to be discussed. And I was like, you know, it's funny how scientists operate these days. It's like haplogroup X, for example. You know, clearly haplogroup X navigated to America via island hopping, just like I mentioned earlier. I mean, genetic maps clearly shows that Plato was perfectly right when he said they navigated to America. In fact, heavy traces of haplogroup X. We have those in the Gibraltar. We have those in Scotland, Orkney Islands, Faroe Islands, and Iceland. We have them. Every stop along the way, we have heavy traces of haplogroup X. And then finally, we have a huge amount of haplogroup X around the Great Lakes. So we know for a fact this 10,000-year-old civilization, this gene, and by the way, only X and no other gene came along with it, came in America via island hopping via the Atlantic 10 to 12,000 years ago.
Okay, now so you're going to need to explain the haplogroup X. You're going to need to explain it because you just jumped into that. I was going to wait for a bit to talk about that. But
okay, I'm sorry.
Those are genetic precursors to people who lived in Europe. So
yeah,
tell us
culture,
about this.
Exactly.
Yeah,
each culture have their own gene. And we have this haplogroup X gene that they say it's originated around the Mediterranean, Eastern Mediterranean to be exact, around the Middle East, from the area I'm talking about, all the way back to the Middle East, which includes North Africa, Middle East, parts of Greece, the Greek islands, and parts of Turkey. That's where the scientists are saying haplogroup X originated. Which that brings us back to Plato. You know, when I say Plato said, you know, we had this civilization based in that area on the Cyclades Plateau, on this super island, most likely that's where it originated from. But anyways, today scientists are saying, no, Plato is just a myth. You know, no, it did not navigate to America via, you know, island hopping. It walked all the way to America on the opposite side, you know, via the Bering Strait. And that's what they insist on. If you ask any scientist today, they will insist on that. My question is this, though. If haplogroup X walk all the way to America backwards, why the last trace of haplogroup X only exists in southern Russia, from Altai Republic in southern Russia, all the way to the region of the Great Lakes, thousands of miles, there is no trace whatsoever of haplogroup X, period. No trace whatsoever.
Right.
That's one problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem...
There's a lot of problems. The other problem is that the people who came, according to them, on the Bering Strait were of a different race, and then you get... I mean, the Kennewick man throws a whole wrench into that. So
you see what in my opinion, the Kennewick man, whether he came from Polynesia or Europe, which by the way, some features on the skull indicate that he may be Caucasian. Nevertheless, wherever he came from proves once and for all that 10,000 years ago, because these skeletal remains are 10,000 years old, proves that people did come to North America, whether they came from all the way from Polynesia, which, by the way, is even hotter, or they came from Europe, as Plato claimed. Now, going back to Hubble Group X, not only are there no traces of X between southern Russia and the Great Lakes, but in fact, on genetic maps, we see that all the traces are on the east side, not on the west side, where scientists insist that Hubble Group X infiltrated America. So if and it's a paradox, you know, and I don't know why they keep insisting on that, you know, instead of listen to the ancient stories, whether they came from Plato or anybody else, and if a genetic map looked like those stories might be right, well, pay attention to it. Why ignore it?
It's all about technology, though. I think, and I see this in Yucatan and in the Central America areas in these buildings, as we develop more scanning technology that can read DNA, that can read evidence of location of the materials, as they can read, and actually I believe that there's information imbued in a lot of these buildings, and I can't tell you how it was done, but now that we know that the Mayans built their pyramid complexes over geomagnetic fields and that those fields were enhanced as they passed up through these pyramids, that opens up a whole Pandora's box of possible uses for those pyramids and an understanding that we have lost on natural occurring energetic fields. But my point is that information was handed down by another people. The Mayas did not originate that information. So,
well, absolutely, I agree with what you said earlier in the show that that somebody had influenced these people. You know, in fact, if the Minoans were coming to North America for copper and spices as early as between 2,500 BC and 1,500 BC, which, by the way, it was the time their civilization got destroyed by the eruption of Santorini. If they were coming here for 1,000 years, surely I thought, you know, they came down south. And my research showed that they came as far down as Georgia. In fact, you know, there was an artifact they found, I think in 1966, here in Georgia with texts from that match the Minoan text, basically, which, you know, caught my attention to go into a further speculation, and I started looking further south, and I was thinking, okay, you know, well, if they were traveling south, again, over the centuries, you know, looking for more wealth and opportunity, why wouldn't they come all the way further down and, you know, into the Mexico area, basically, into the Yucatan Peninsula, and basically look around there as well. And I, you know, like you said, you know, I believe the their god Kublai Khan, you know, which was a white person, a Caucasian person, who came and left via the ocean, you know, I truly believe may have been a Minoan perpetrator who came so and possibly help them ignite their own civilization. In fact, that is why later on when the conquistadors showed up, the Mayans thought their god, Kublai Khan, came back as he promised and thought, okay, you know, we're good now, but instead they got slaughtered just because it was a big misunderstanding, thinking, you know, one Caucasian could be the same as the next. You know, they just didn't know any better.
Yeah.
So
and that's the sad part about the
that
whole...
in itself is suspicious, right?
Yeah, well, that's the sad part about the whole conquistadors, the Spanish... were so damn backwards that rather than and the Padres were supposed to be the educated ones. Well, they were the worst perpetrators of evil.
Well,
and
they came
basically
here for
wiped
gold, you
the
know?
Wiped the Mayan cultural blueprint off the face of the planet. So,
yeah,
I want to talk
you
a little bit about
back then gold. I mean, they were here definitely for the riches and the gold, not
yeah,
for a research.
Yeah, all they cared about is gold and but I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
What can you expect? That's
but,
you know, it's.
But what's fascinating about the Mayan, though, and if you look at their architecture, is nothing but a mix of Minoan and Middle Eastern architecture. You know, you have the Minoan structures with columns. And, I mean, if you look at some photographs, they perfectly, their color schemes, their murals they used, their columns, arches. I'm in construction myself, and that quickly caught my attention. That, in my opinion, I think the Minoan architecture is based upon the Minoan and the Middle Eastern architecture, you know, with the ziggurat pyramids and all that stuff. So I think the Mayans came, I'm sorry, the Minoans came first. They introduced themselves and helped the Mayan, you know, around 2000 BC crank up their civilization. And very possibly later came the Phoenicians from the Middle East and brought more architecture and more knowledge. And that's when we started having the ziggurats.
I have to tell you this, though, that we're going to talk a little bit about the Cyclades Plateau and Santori Islands or island. But until they can get underwater and see and excavate, I mean, the Maya were a pyramid culture. And every city they had either a central pyramid with smaller pyramids around it, or they had a lot of other pyramids. So I understand what you're saying about the Minoans being an influencer, but I think the Maya are probably older than, or equal. No, I believe they're older than the Minoans, simply because that there are huge areas that are completely covered underground, which means they were probably hit. Portions of the peninsula, Yucatan Peninsula in Central America, were hit with huge tsunamis, were covered underwater and buried under soot and dirt. I've seen this firsthand myself. There's huge areas that are uncovered that are, and like this place I was talking about today in Veracruz, it's an entire city.
And I saw the photos, by the way, they look pretty cool.
Yeah, it's completely covered under dirt, and this is a pyramid complex. It's a huge, huge multi-pyramid city that's buried, and there's a lot of other places like that, but this one is very, very amazing. But hey, let's talk about the Cyclades Plateau and your belief. And now, for people who don't know where this is and the Santori Island, it's between Turkey and Greece.
It's the south of Greece, actually. The very top part of this island of Atlantis, as I propose it, the very top part of it, actually, it almost touches Greece. It extends from Santorini all the way up to parts of Greece, and yes, you're right. It's actually, if you want to put it a little more generic, it's between Greece and Turkey in the South Aegean.
Yeah.
And
The thing I want to talk about, though, is the Santori Island, the way it is formed actually relates to something that Plato said about one of the central areas that is circular. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, well, actually, we all know every location today that has been proposed as Atlantis is based on concentric rings of earth and water. And when you find this, I got Atlantis all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. You know, we have places in the desert, we have places on land, and we have places in the sea. You know, they sure have rings of concentric rings of earth and water. The problem is, though, that by itself does not match Plato's entire description, and that's why the Santorini original hypothesis fell apart when it was originally proposed that, hey, this could be the site of Atlantis. Everything fits about it. But skeptics said, no, what is the rest of the island, first of all? And why do you have to ignore the 9600 BC period that Plato said in his story? So therefore, this is wrong. And that's how they left it. And basically, that's how I found it. And I was thinking, I had to go back and revisit that, you know, and see exactly what scientists were saying about it. But again, once you change the year and you go back to 9600 BC, like I said, and you lower the oceans by 400 feet, it's right there. It's a huge island, a super island, actually, and it's right there, you know, and it's exactly region by region, just like Plato said.
Yeah, what's fascinating about this is that you, and just for our audience, I'll be posting this diagram that Chris has created for the readers of his book, but he sent me a page called Plato's Lost Island of Atlantis Found. And the Santorini Island actually is a a huge island that has these rings. And I mean, Plato talks about this very specifically. Now, how much of this area has been excavated? Do we know? Has anyone gone underwater?
Well, okay. Let me say this. Atlantis, to most mainstream archaeologists and historians, is a forbidden word. You know, nobody will excavate under the name of Atlantis. Now, the island itself, let me say that, has been heavily excavated. And during those excavations, they found the ancient city of Akrotiri, which it's 3,500 years old, and it belonged to the Minoan era. They're also
Where was it excavated? Excuse me. Where? What city? What area?
It's on the tip of Santorini, actually, on the southern tip
of Santorini. Okay.
It's called the city of Akrotiri.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Minoan city that is old as 3,500 years.
Okay.
This is the oldest city they found on the island. On the other hand, like I said, not only on Santorini, but on all the Cyclades islands in the immediate area, they're finding these other funny-looking artifacts that they look nothing like those created by the Minoans. In fact, I saw some of those presented in the Colosseum when I was in Rome last year. I saw those, and I took several photos because I never seen one close up. I only went on the internet when I did my book and did my research, and you know, I saw these pre-Minoan artifacts there that, like I said, you know, these statues have no eyes, no eyebrows, no, it's just a single nose with a weird-looking statue, you know, that, again, you know, nobody knows who did them, you know. So I have a feeling eventually they're going to say those probably are Minoan too, but I think those are post-Atlantean artifacts that we're finding on Santorini as well as the remaining islands created by those who survived the flood.
Okay. I am, just to let our audience know, you can see this amazing map of the Cyclades Plateau, Santorini Island, and our guest today, Chris, has detailed specific discoveries and information made on every portion of this. Now, it's funny, if it's, I mean, your belief was that the Great Flood covered a good portion of it, and I'd say it looks like at least 60%, maybe more, or maybe less, of the island is 400 feet below sea level.
Yeah, but Cliff, all you see right now today is just the tips of maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen little islands. I'm talking about so tiny they cannot support vegetation.
Right.
Okay, and those used to be the mountaintops of Atlantis. When you read Plato's story and he said, you know, the Atlantis was made out of mountains in the north and blah, blah, blah. You know, what's left today are tiny, tiny, you know, back then, by the way, 10,000 years ago, this island was green, a green island, like he described it. In fact, not just I'm say so, but it was discovered that this island was a green island that supported heavy vegetation, woods that they used to used to build enormous houses and structures, and it had elephants, exactly just like Plato said in his story. So excavations prove all this. You know, so when you continue to read Plato's text, and he said in his text that after the island disappeared in the depths, what's left behind are these little islets that they cannot provide sustenance to bees. And that's how he dramatically put it, that they're so tiny they cannot even, once upon a time they used to provide, you know, timber and water and, you know, all that stuff, and now they cannot even provide sustenance to bees. So that shows you, he described it exactly to the T how these islands are today. You know, they're so tiny, and all you see is like a tiny little island you can see from one end to the other, basically, and that's what's left behind.
Yeah. So Were you aware of any excavations other than the Santorini Islands? Were there any excavations done on any other part of the remaining?
Yes, they are constantly. Greece is known for excavations. By the way, to own a metal detector in Greece is illegal. So no private entity no private entity conducts any research out there unless it's pre-approved by the Greek government. There's so many artifacts everywhere; it's unbelievable. If you're gonna get a permit to dig a foundation for your house, you have to have the police present. You know, just in case you run into something, and most likely you're gonna run into something.
Yeah. Hey, here's a question I'm going to give you in the few minutes we have left. What would you say is the greatest evidence that the Minoans are the descendants of the Latinians? Is it that they had, and I'm not that up on Minoans, but they did have sophisticated homes. We know that, which means that they, had a level of understood, water and sewage and things like that, and the importance of cleanliness. But astronomy or the science?
Well, they had, which, by the way, let me say this. My conclusion is by finding Atlantis at 9600 BC, what that proves is two things. One, Plato's story was based on a real setting. And two, since Athens and many other story details could not exist during that time, it leaves no doubt that Plato did Atlantis as Homer did with Troy 400 years earlier. We all know today that with the city of Troy, basically what Homer, said, we know that was a true incident, true setting, but we know basically the details, the demigods, the beauty queens and all that stuff was fiction. Well, I think Plato base his story on a real setting, obviously, because here is a match, and a prehistoric civilization known to ancient Greeks, in order to communicate some of his philosophical ideas like good versus evil, ideal societies versus corrupt. I think he filled with familiar matter from later times, including the Minoan. So, I think in Plato's case, again, having found the island so far back, before even Greeks existed, I think Plato used that setting and the ancient civilization that was known to Greeks as the basis of the story. And when he said they came across the ocean and all that stuff, that's part of it correct. But when he started bringing into the mix Greek gods, the Athens and the fights against the Atlanteans and all that good stuff, at the end, all that was fiction. And that's why a lot of people are confused today and nobody can find anything. And that's why from the get-go, I decided I'm going to look for the place and forget the details. And if I find the place that matches, I'll worry about the details later. Well, finding the place in 9600 BC proves once and for all that the details are fake, except of some basics, basically.
Fantastic. The book is called Uchronia, Atlantis Revealed, and my guest today is Christos Dijonis. And this book is fantastic. It's a great read, and he's packed it full of really good current information and research, and it's a good piece to collect from. I checked it out. It's on Amazon, and is it a digital form as well as a printed form? I always ask
that. Yes, you can get it on Kindle as well.
Okay, so it's on Kindle, so you can see it on your Kindle device or any digital device. Fantastic. Are you planning additional research on this, or are you just kind of following along and seeing what other people dig up on
Well, I'm research? Following along to see what the Greek government does, Cliff. I communicated this with them already that I'm interested to work with them, to look for it. Mm-hmm. I've even found a research institution in England that they do non-profit research work, but like I said, nobody wants to touch the word Atlantis unless the media and somebody serious comes forward first and say, oh, it's possible. Until then, you know, I'm trying to debate this as much as I can with scholars, scientists, anybody who's willing to discuss this with me, hoping to take this to the next level.
Wonderful. You can read more about this on his website, which is AtlantisIslandRevealed.com. And I took a look at it. He's got a lot of information on there. And I imagine you're going to continually post information as it comes to you. So,
yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for being on the program. And I am going to post Chris's map. Again, it's Plato's Lost Island of Atlantis is Found. It'll be on Facebook, Earth